family and friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, Famous. You and I are tuned in to the Tim and Friends Show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Certified sports host. This is Tim and Friends in Sportsnet, Sportsnet 360. If you're PVRing the show on the regular, make sure that you do it on 360 at the full Monty. Because on days like today, we are the full 2 hours in Sportsnet 360, 90 minutes on Sportsnet before handing it off to Jamie and Arden and Ben. Yes, Ben Nicholson-Smith and Arden Swelling joining Jamie Campbell on Blue Jay Central ahead of what feels like a must-win series for the Jays. Oakland in the six to do battle with the Bluebirds. I'm so reticent to say the words must-win when it actually isn't must-win, but it feels, Jesse, like baseball is different. Like, eventually you just run out of runway, and the Jays are close to that point.
Yeah, who cares about the mathematical elimination? Like, once right. you get to a certain point, you're done.
You're done.
It's September. Like, that's the reality.
Go time.
100%.
You don't take 2 or 3, this could be jam done.
I agree.
Dan Shulman popping by. We'll see if he agrees as well. And call it a football Friday around here. You'll probably do that from now until January. Labor Day on the horizon means it's go time for teachers, students, and football fans of all varieties. That's right. Big weekend of college football. The CFL classics are coming, and the NFL less than a week away from kicking off. Can you tell I'm a little excited? I'm almost... That wasn't me. That was Jesse that made that noise, by the way. I'm almost as excited as this dad watching his child graduate.
Krayshawn.
He reappears in style.
Hold on, he's confirmed a father of one of the person who graduated, right? Because you know, you can get planted now these days. It could be a plant. You know,
I made an assumption there, Jesse, that I may be wrong on, but I'm more than willing to be wrong on.
Because you know, they do it at arenas now. They do it with the ushers, and the ushers are just kind of planted.
I know that they do this with fans.
I'm just saying.
At professional sporting events. At graduations, they do
that? I don't know. Everyone just wants to go viral these days. They're willing to do anything. So, I mean, hopefully it was genuine.
I know that you've become a professional dancer. So would you, like, hire yourself out for graduation ceremonies?
Well, I mean, he has the benefit of being able to stand up and dance. Like, I'm just sitting here like this.
Oh, so it would be different.
I'm more restricted than him. Like, he had the stairs, he had the railing, he had everything.
Like, why can't you stand?
I choose not to, I guess.
It just, like, halfway through, I was like,
well, what am I going to do?
We were bowling in the studio yesterday, and now you're telling me you can't stand.
I'm not going to be standing when the camera, the only time I dance is the opening. When the camera pans, and I'm not going to be standing during that time. That's just weird.
Get up.
Maybe I'll do it. No, I'm not dancing now.
No, I'm not going to ask you to dance, but you can get up at any time.
Okay.
You're still in the shot, even though we only have one camera person, and Dagan is back.
Oh, no.
Oh, look out. Sixero would get up.
Sid would get up.
Sid would get up.
Maybe we'll tweet in a video now.
All right, Sixero, if you're watching and you want to dance for Jesse's dead, please do. All right, in order to help you get ready for this football weekend, for this football frenzy that we are about to saunter into, former NFL MVP Rich Gannon dropping by for our AFC West preview, and Tim and Friends MVP Nate Burleson also dropping by. We'll ask him, who's the best receiver in the game? We'll also ask the best receiver on our roster, at least until Michael Irvin joins us again. Don't tell Nate I said that. I'm playing. He's our forever. He's our forever receiver and also our favorite return man. All right, kids. That'll about do it. Both kinds of football will be evident on today's show, oblong and round, as Canada tries to qualify for the World Cup in 2022. 3 games, 7 days starting last night. We'll tell you what happened and what to expect. Sunday in Nashville, it's Tim and Friends for a Friday, best of the week, and then it's Saturday, Sunday. It's Friday then. It's Saturday, Sunday. So let's kick off the festivities. Jesse, Biggie, first things first.
First things first.
A lot of hockey fans around North America and the world are dancing today. Because there's some pretty big news. The NHL players are heading back to the Olympics.
They got the guts to dance.
Oh, yeah. At least that's the plan. The league and PA reached an agreement with the IIHF and IOC today, allowing NHLers to go to Beijing in February after they skipped the 2018 games in Pyeongchang. The league and the players have the ability to withdraw if COVID circumstances change for the worse. Hopefully they don't. Who are the big winners in this big decision, Tim?
Knock on that wood, my friend. Hopefully they don't. I saw you over there.
Yeah, it's glass here, but oh yeah, I guess wood's there. All right, there it is. Yeah.
I'm not supposed to show me cheating over there. listen, this is going to be played out like the players got their wish, that the league listened to their constituency and their fans and got this done. But I never had any doubt because it was China. I know everyone wants to play this geopolitical game with China, and I get it and understand it to a certain extent, but the NHL is a money-making enterprise, and they've reached limits in certain areas. Jesse, where is the biggest growth market for North American professional sports?
That would be Asia.
It's the same place the EPL found it. Yep. It would be Asia. It would be China, and this will be played off like the players got their wish. But outside some negotiations between the NHL and the IOC, the league was always going to China. And apparently, even in a pandemic, even with diplomatic tensions, why? The answer is quite simple. Randy Moss, straight cash, homie.
Nice.
That's where we're at.
Yep.
And I get it. The players want to go. I understand it. There are certain situations around it. As soon as they announce China, I mean, you think they're going to Italy next? Do you think after this Chinese Winter Olympics, do you think that the NHL players will be going to Italy?
I think the NHL players will want to continue this for as long as they possibly can, but it's basically a decision that the league will have to make.
I think the league makes a decision based on cash, and they really like for the IOC to start ponying up some money for sending their best players, but it seems like the IOC is intent on making this as cheap as possible.
Like, it has to work economically for the NHL because the fact is they are stopping their season in the middle of the season. Like, the way this is going to work when they go to Beijing is there's going to be the All-Star weekend.
Crazy.
And then the next day, whoever's at the All-Star game is going to get on a jet, go to Beijing, and play a couple days later. So that's going to be difficult for the players, and it's basically the NHL needs to be able to see that the economics are worth it because they are stopping their league right in the middle of February. So that's tough.
For those who don't know, NHL All-Star Weekend, Vegas, February 4th and 5th. Olympic tournament begins February 9th in China.
Yes. That's good luck to them.
I think this is one where everyone was on board. For those who missed this, Connor McDavid, because there's a bunch of guys who have never played in the Olympics. Connor McDavid's one of them, and it's obvious he's one of the ones that wanted to go.
Well, I think for any Canadian kid growing up playing the game, you want to play in the NHL, you want to win a Stanley Cup, and then, you know, right there next on the list is representing your country at the Olympics and winning a gold medal. So I'm certainly no different there. That's that would be a massive dream come true to represent my country.
CJ Chris Johnson, friend of the show. Players will need to be fully vaccinated, keep tight bubbles while in Beijing, and won't be covered by COVID insurance and likely can't bring guests. So
yikes.
I hope the players really want to go because it seems like, just like the NHL's COVID protocols, the NHL at the Olympics COVID protocols are going to be tight. For those who missed the COVID protocols in the National Hockey League, Elliot Friedman started tweeting, and man, are there some interesting things in and among them. Teams can suspend unvaccinated players who are unable to participate in team activities, including travel, which might be the case for many, and won't have to pay unvaccinated players who test positive if they can prove the player failed to comply with protocols. What we got from the NHL, Jesse, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is as close to a mandatory vaccination policy as you can get without having a mandatory vaccination policy.
Yeah, even if you're considered to be a high-risk contact of someone who tested positive and then you can't travel and you're unvaccinated, the team can withhold your paycheck.
Right.
So this
so
is
if you and your wife aren't vaccinated,
yeah.
your wife happens to get it, and this you're is, not vaccinated.
Yes, this is as tough. This is as tough as any of the other leagues as well. Now, I should point out that about 2 weeks ago, or a week ago even, the numbers for vaccinations in the NHL was hovering around 85%.
Mm-hmm.
And the most recent updates say it's closer now to 95%.
Okay. I saw that it was the lowest among the top four leagues.
And that was before yesterday's release of these COVID protocols. So you would think
even some
unvaccinated players who look at this and say, well, this is really going to make my life difficult, maybe we'll end up getting vaccinated because of that.
Yeah, this is it, kids. Get used to it. The smartest people in the world who study these things for a living are saying that this is our way to get out of this. And all of the biggest money-making institutions in the world are agreeing with them, the NHL being one of them. This is the wave of the future. And frankly, listen, I understand social media peddles in the anti-establishment or the anti-anything, but let's be honest. Just look at the vaccination numbers in this country.
Yeah.
Like, it is a vocal minority, right? Like, we're talking about what? Right now, 3 of 4 able to get vaccinated, 75% or more are vaccinated in this country if you're able to. It seems like when you turn on social media or the news or all these, everyone's focusing on the few that aren't, when it's quite obvious that there is a majority who believes in it.
I mean, you go on social media, you probably think the entire country isn't vaccinated.
Right.
The whole world isn't vaccinated.
Well, I was going to say the world is burning.
Yeah,
like, you turn on social media and it looks like the world
that's just the
they
way
call it
is.
Doom scrolling for a reason.
Yes, exactly. We will have some Canadian roster projections, perhaps, a little bit later in the show. But we don't want to get into that right now because we have other things to talk about. And first things first, including a pretty important soccer match that we did a job of hyping up yesterday, and some might say it was a little bit of a letdown for the Canadians, played to a 1-1 draw with Honduras last night in Toronto in their opening match of the final round of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. Both goals were scored on penalties, with Honduras taking a 1-0 lead in the 40th minute. Kyle Larin tying it for Canada in the 66th minute. Expectations never been higher for the Canadian men's team. We just talked about this being the most talented roster the side's ever had. Were you satisfied with last night's result, Timmy? I know you were there.
No, not really. I'm going to be honest here. And here's why I wasn't. I was one of the ones that was feeding into the expectations, and I felt like it was a little bit of a letdown because you really needed those 3 points at home, because going on the road to Honduras is not going to be easy, as evidenced by the last time we played a big game in Honduras and lost 8-1. Going to Panama, going to El Salvador, going to Costa Rica, all these places are going to be remarkably hard to go get your 3 points. And the Canadian team had an opportunity last night where it looked like early they were dominating play, and then they got dragged into the Honduran game. And for me, this is not only a little bit of a letdown, not only unsatisfying, but to me, this was a wonderful learning experience for a young team that got CONCACAF. And I'm not just talking about the official handing what looked like a penalty from that angle. I was there live, and I thought that the Honduran initiated contact with Tejon Buchanan to end up getting that call. But I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about how the Hondurans, very experienced, understood that they were probably out-talented last night on the pitch, and they decided, we're going down, we're staying down, we're acting, we're trying to get under people's skin. They got under people's skin. The coach got into it with Steven Eustachio.
Yeah.
Like, everywhere you turn, this was pure CONCACAF, we're dragging you down to our level, and the Canadians fell for it. I thought they had more talent on the field, and they allowed themselves to get into it. That, along with the odd move to take Alfonso Davies, who was tearing up the left side early, and put him on the right side, and he basically didn't touch the ball for about 20 to 30 minutes. were the two things that stood in the way of Canada getting 3 points. But despite being CONCACAF, learn, take it forward. Won't be the same in Nashville.
No.
It'll be a tough spot on Sunday, but it won't be the same in Nashville. What I'm talking about is those classic CONCACAF, very experienced countries that know how to get their points. And I thought the Hondurans did a wonderful job yesterday of taking points that maybe they didn't deserve based on the run of play.
Were you encouraged by what you saw in the second half? I know the overall possession numbers at
John
the end of
Herdman
the match was
66%. Yeah.
So he said basically, it's a marathon, not a sprint. We wanted the 3 points, but I thought our team came together at halftime. And then in the second half, we kind of responded, got over the CONCACAFing, as you put it, a little bit and played better.
If they learned.
Yes.
If they take that learning process, of course. And this is how you're going to learn. And it's easier to do that in Toronto than it will be in San Pedro Sula.
Yeah.
Like, this is an easier lesson to learn here. And to be honest with you, they got away with it a little bit because the United States drew with El Salvador 0-0. Yeah. That's 3 points that many thought the United States would get. Panama and Costa Rica also drew 0-0. Mexico needed a late goal to get past. I think Jamaica is going to be the one team that's going to, and listen, I think Costa Rica, I think Jamaica, I think Canada and Honduras are the ones battling it out here. And I think Jamaica is going to be a little bit better. So Canada's got to steal some points.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that last night.
Still a long runway, but I think more pressure with every match that you don't get 3 points.
They got 14.
On your home pitch.
You got, oh yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Home pitch, get those 3 points. So here's the rest of the window for Canada. Sunday they get the States, as mentioned, in Nashville. Then it's El Salvador on Wednesday back at BMO. This is the first of five windows scheduled for October, November, January, and March. 14 games in all. They played just the one. And yes, Canada will be playing at home in November and January. Where? Yet to be determined. But Mexico in Canada on November 16th. I say put them in Edmonton, Jesse.
Yeah.
Throw them to Alfonso Davies' hometown. Throw them to Edmonton and pack Commonwealth.
Love it. Okay, let's move on to the Toronto Blue Jays because we mentioned off the top.
Yes.
Pretty important series here with the Oakland A's. It's Manaea and Manoa.
Hey.
As they open a big series against the A's tonight at Rogers Centre. The Jays currently five games back of the Red Sox. For the second wild card spot in the AL, while the A's are just 2 games back of Boston. It's the first time the Jays and A's have met since early May. How do you think they stack up in this big one?
I think Ben Nicholson-Smith said it to us that the Jays are better on paper, but this is just like Canada. Very similar, where a young team is going up against a little bit more veteran squad. Like, this A's team are very patient. They will grind you out. Saw the numbers earlier. Pitches seen per plate appearance. Matt Chapman, number one in the American League. Mark Canha, number two. Matt Olson, number 14. Like, they will grind you. They will wait you out. And it'll be really interesting to see how a kid like Manoa react. He's been unbelievable.
He'll just strike them all out. That's what he's been doing.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. He has been one of, if not the best rookie pitcher in the American League. A 3.15 ERA, a 106 whip, but it's a high-pressure spot for your 15th career start in what is basically a must-win series. I think that this is a real interesting. I know there's a lot of Jays fans who either think that this is already done or don't want to put pressure on the kid. These are remarkable learning opportunities if you are open to it. And for Alek Manoa to go in this game and face a team that's going to try and wait him out, I'm here for it. I'm tuning in.
Yeah, I think the strength of the A's team, similar to the Jays lately, has been their pitching. But Chris Bassitt, you don't know when he's going to come back. Manaea, his numbers are a little bit, you saw, 3.97 ERA. That's been a little bit deceiving. He hasn't been good over the last little month. So the Jays have an opportunity here to take advantage of a team and a pitcher specifically that's struggling a little bit.
Yeah, a little weird with the A's, right? They've won 4 or 5 coming in.
Yeah.
But that came after a little bit of a losing streak,
exactly.
a 3-11 stretch. Have they gotten over that 3-11 stretch, or are they still banged up and struggling a little bit? But hey, it lines up. You saw it. Manoa, Berrios, Ray. There you go, Jace.
You got
the opportunity. It's right in front of you. You could run past them.
There you go. Have our takes. Dan Shulman will be along a little bit later. You'll hear what he has to say about a big series for the Jays. Okay, Labor Day weekend, always a big one in the CFL. The Week 5 schedule begins tonight with the Owls and Red Blacks in Ottawa. The Bombers and Riders will battle for first in the West on Sunday. That's a huge tilt. And, of course, the Labor Day Classics on Monday. What stood out to you from the first 4 weeks of the season?
Besides the Riders, besides Saskatchewan Rough Riders getting off to a good start, I think we're going to see a lot of parity this year in the CFL. I think we're going to see teams find their sea legs. Just look at the Eastern Conference or the Eastern Division. It's all bottled up, 1-2, 2-1. And I don't know if the Argos can hang on to where they're at. Yeah. It's going to be crazy. One of the things that you and I talked about very early was my lack of surprise at how the offenses were struggling with no camps and no season last year. And the average points per game in the CFL at this point in the season, it's over 11. Like, there are 11 points per game less than they were in 2019. That's the comparison. And it's significant. So the under being 12-3 is wonderful for all the bettors, but I'm guessing that the books have adjusted as of yet. And I think some of that has to do with some injuries at quarterback. And listen, four of the nine teams in the CFL have already moved on to a second quarterback, and I think that's just a wave of the future in both the CFL, the NFL. Players are getting bigger, stronger, and faster. The size of the field is staying the same. This has been the past in the CFL. This is probably the future everywhere.
Yeah, you mentioned the lack of scoring and the lack of training camps. Maybe the fact that over 30% of the players in CFL are new to the CFL maybe has something to do with it, too.
Yeah, I saw Dave Naylor write a great article about all of this stuff, and it all kind of, I know I shouldn't be advertising for the other side, but he kind of listed a lot of this stuff that we're talking about right now, and I was all over this low scoring, and I should have been all over the under early in the CFL season.
Still time.
But I wasn't thinking, no, they're adjusted, man. For sure they're adjusted. I should have bet all the unders.
All right, let's go overs now. We'll go overs moving forward.
Yeah, maybe. Still to come, Dan Shulman from the Rogers Center. Jays open up a three-game series against the A's. Best of the week also coming up. Rich Gannon helps us tee up the AFC West as our divisional previews continue. And up next, six days before the NFL season opener. Our NFL analyst, all around awesome guy, Nate Burleson, joins us next. Tim and friends on a Friday. Let's go, kids.
Cousins, 1, 2, 3 strikes you around at the old ball game.
The Buccaneers have beaten the defending champion Chiefs 31-9.
This was a dominating performance across the board.
Here's your forecast as we go through the day tomorrow. Yes, Storm is in the building, getting some treats, walking on thin air. 24 degrees.
We are family. You know how much I love you. We go way back. I've
you
always appreciated.
Kissed my fat head once.
Of course. That makes us closer than blood, straight up and down.
Phil McCracken. Phil McCracken.
I got no idea how we keep getting this dude, but I'm not asking questions. Freshly minted co-host CBS This Morning making his debut on September 7th, a day after Labor Day. Fitting, because my dude puts in work. Ladies and gentlemen. Born in the 403, apparently raised by hard work. It's our old friend Nate Burleson. What up, Nate?
What's up, baby? How you doing? I'm digging that blazer. I like the plaid and that little handkerchief right there. Nice little subtle touch, man. And the frames, always money.
Listen, when you're this ugly, you better dress well. So that's what I'm trying to do.
See, you're always fishing for compliments. Supposed to follow up and say, No.
Tim, I know. I'm a realist. I know. I grew up youngest of four boys. We did not hold back. Like, I'm good. We're good. I want to say I watched your episode or your final episode of GMFB with the one with you on. Like, I love what y'all built in that community. It's always what I hope this thing is. No real question. Just admiration. I love that you guys. The way you finished was class. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's funny. You kind of you're raised watching different shows, and when there's the season finale or the series finale, it gets a little bit emotional. I would have never thought in a million years I'd be part of a sports show and my send-off would get that emotional, yeah, getting all choked up, tears in my eyes. But that just shows you the love and the camaraderie over the last 5 years.
No doubt. I know the feeling as well. I didn't think I would get choked up either. I did, but we also finished with a bottle of Remy, so that was our way of making those tears go away. For all of our Nate fans, CBS This Morning, starting September 7th, saw a quote that I loved in all the press that you're doing right now, which is why you're on the move, but always safe with the safety belt on. The quote was, "I've always felt like sacrifice is a small cost to pay for achieving my wildest dreams." That's dope and remarkably true.
Yeah, it really is, man. And this position that I'm in, you know, people look at it and say, well, one, Nate deserves to be in that spot. But then there's other people that say, well, has he worked to get there? And there's a lot of work put in behind the scenes, not just over the last 7 years, uprooting the family, moving to New York, working multiple jobs. I'm juggling five jobs for the last 3 years. But even prior to that, during my career, I would fly myself to Los Angeles. I would meet with producers and execs. Oftentimes, they wouldn't pay me at all because they had this motto, if you're playing, then we're not paying. So I would just be in the studio trying to learn. So since 2003, I would say consistently, I've been going into some type of studio in the offseason. So by the time my career was over, I knew that I had some relationships established that would help me transition into the media space. And then once I got in, you know how it is, Tim. You got to put your head down and work. You got to outwork some of your peers, and you got to outwork some of your mentors, people that you look up to, just to prove your versatility. And finally, a door is open of this magnitude, where I'm talking to the world. Right. You know, and people are deciding to wake up with Gail, Tony, and I, and we're giving them not just sports, but what I've been doing, but news, worldly news.
For those who aren't quick on the math, this overnight sensation is 18 years in the making. All right.
There you go. Yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about. Yes. There you go.
Let's talk some ball. This is a crazy opening weekend for college ball. Bama, Miami, Penn State, Wisconsin, among other. Like, is this where you draw the line, or can you possibly take that in too? Like, there's no way that you can do college ball too, can you?
No, but I've thought about it, though. I seriously thought about? I want it to be like my era, Ahmad Rashad. So I wanted to do basketball. I wanted to do the NBA. Right. I was really close to signing a deal a couple of years ago just to do a few shows of NCAA basketball. But you know what? My mom told me, don't outwork yourself. Just outwork your competition. So I found my sweet spot, and I'll let all of the great college analysts and hosts handle that.
Nice. That's what I miss most. Like, Saturday is my family day, and I was a huge college basketball, college football dude, and it's kind of fallen by the wayside because that's family time. Saturday is my family. All right, let me hit you with wheelhouse here. And right in your wheelhouse.
Let's go.
Who's the best receiver in the game right now? Nate Burleson, the dude who used to catch the ball for a living. Who's the best receiver in the game?
All right, I'll go with Stephon Diggs. I feel like Stephon Diggs is the best quarterback. I mean, the best receiver, best young quarterback in the ball. Now, when it comes to hands, you know, I'm gonna give that to Devontae Adams or DeAndre Hopkins. But I believe that Stephon Diggs is the best overall wide receiver in the NFL.
How hard is that to go from one team to another and then just pick up, not even pick up where you left off, like advance? Like, he took his game to another level first year with the team.
Yeah, you know what? It was weird because when he was traded, you know, people were really questioning if he still had it. You know, it was almost like, well, if he's that good, then why are the Vikings trading him? So I think there was a little bit of motivation in that. And also, when he got traded, they drafted Justin Jefferson, who is no slouch.
No.
So it wasn't just motivation when he got traded, but I'm pretty sure week in and week out, he was like, yo, for damn sure, I got to beat out this young dude, Justin Jefferson, who is talented, and prove that, one, the Vikings should have kept me, and that, two, the Bills are going to be the recipients of this evolution of my career. And he is a beast, man. He can do it all. Outside, inside, great hands, strong. When he catches the rock, and yards after catch, to me, he's just the complete wideout.
Let me ask you, as a guy that played the position, how much does team – I feel like receivers – though they feel like at times they're on an island, if you're on a good offense
with a good quarterback, even a guy on the other side that can draw some attention away from you, or a tight end that can draw, like all of those things, the ability to run the ball can help you do your job.
100%. You know, at certain points in my career, I wanted to have the best running game rather than having the best quarterback and group of wide receivers. When I was young playing next to Randy Moss, I thought to myself, all right, as long as I got a good wideout and a good quarterback, I can torch secondary corners and nickel backs that are young or they just are not good enough to guard me. But then when I got older, I realized how much a running game helps good wide receivers. I mean, just think about, let's just throw Devontae Adams out there. You have Aaron Jones, who is one of the better running backs in the business, but it takes so much pressure off of the passing game when defenses have to load the box. The best thing a wideout can see is a safety with his eyes in the backfield, linebackers peeking at the running back, and you one-on-one with the DB. That's why I'm looking at the Tennessee Titans. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, you know they're going to see a lot of single coverage because Derrick Henry is in the backfield and he's a monster.
All right, let me hot take this best receiver. And I phrased it on receiver on purpose. Could Travis Kelce be the best receiver in the game?
Yeah. Yeah, because I look at the wide receiver position and how it has evolved. It's not about being a wide out that's out wide and you're 6'1", 195 pounds. Nah, if you're a pass catcher, you're a receiver. So in that conversation, you could put in Travis Kelce. You could put in George Kittle, and we'll see how good Kyle Pitts is going to be in Atlanta. But, you know, nowadays, you're just a pass catcher because let's just call it what it is. There's certain running backs in the game that when they get busy in the pass game, they're the best receivers in football. There were certain times last year where Alvin Kamara was the best receiver in football, depending on the game and how much they throw him the ball. There are certain games when Christian McCaffrey is the best receiver in football, depending on how they use him. If they motion him, put him in the slot, he'll run routes just like a wideout. So, yeah, if you're a pass catcher, I put you in that category.
Kamara, 83 catches from the backfield is absolutely ridiculous.
Crazy.
All right, so a lot of people are doing their pool over the next little while. What player, quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end, I don't care. What player do you think could be on the verge of something big? And caveat here, you won't remember this because you work too hard. I remember everything because this is all I do. We had a chat. Lamar Jackson, pre-MVP year. So there is some weight that comes with this answer, Nate Burleson.
All right, so I'll give you two. And ironically, they're both in the NFC West. DK Metcalf is on the verge of being the best receiver in all of football. He is literally just scratching the surface on his career. And we're familiar with the size. You know, we know what he looks like when he's flexing his muscles. But this dude is a route runner. To be that big, that fast, that strong, and then to work year in and year out at being a really good route runner, I can only imagine when they start moving him in the slot and he starts torching smaller DBs, it's going to look like child's play. I remember when Calvin Johnson made that transition from being an outside receiver to him lining up in the slot and really condensing his size, going from 6'4", 6'5", to lining up and getting low and bursting off the line of scrimmage and just dominating the middle of the field. Larry Fitzgerald did that towards the end of his career. That really takes a big receiver to another level. And then another guy, Trey Lance. I don't know what it is. Now, I know Jimmy Garoppolo's the guy, but I just feel like as soon as Trey Lance gets on the field, the combination of his athletic ability, he's like a bigger Kaepernick, his strong arm, and then more importantly, Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan is one of the best offensive minds in the business, and he's going to have that offense rolling with that young quarterback.
Is that the new hype? Like, I mean, I feel like we've gone through an evolution. And remember, like you, we grew up in the CFL where Warren Moon had to come here, play 6 years, and look ridiculous. I watch quarterbacks, and I think, like, if I just pure excitement, give me Cam Newton in his prime every day. But I don't know if we're going to see that guy anymore because it's so hard to stay healthy. And we've kind of morphed into this Mahomes-ish, the Russell Wilson-ish hybrid of runner who can still be precision passer. Is that the new quarterback in the NFL?
No doubt about it, which makes what Tom Brady is doing at his age even that much more impressive.
Yeah.
Like, the dude is in his mid-40s. He has never, I repeat, never been a threat to run in his career. Tom Brady is slow. He's not just slow. He's slow, slow.
Yeah, he's
like
McCall
Tom Brady's
slow.
40 time. His 40 time is forever. Like, that's how slow it is. But yet and still, in the pocket, he surgically picks apart defenses. But you're right, though. When it comes to these hybrid quarterbacks, they want the athletic one. But they don't want the athletic one that is reckless with his body and can't throw. That's why when you look at Lamar Jackson, he shut a lot of people up. How many times did people say, well, he's a running quarterback. He's going to take that one big shot. And he's going to go down. He's not going to be back in the game. You know what? He's not that good of a thrower. Lamar Jackson has proven that, one, he can throw the ball, and two, just look at the highlights right now. You let me know when he's taking that big hit. Okay, here he is, escaping the Chiefs, makes one guy miss, two guys miss, three guys miss. Did he take a big shot right there? He made three guys miss in one play. Didn't take a big shot. Right there, four guys miss. You literally see dudes on the ground like he's an and-one mixtape basketball player. Once again, running through another defense, he doesn't take those big shots. So, yeah, there's an evolution of the quarterback position, but you know what? With the way that the league is starting to take care of quarterbacks, which means there's not a lot of illegal shots happening. And two, these QBs being a lot smarter. Like, what is the point of me fighting for a few extra yards if I can save my legs, slide, or go out of bounds? These running quarterbacks, these more athletic quarterbacks, are smarter about how they treat their body when they're out on the field.
Is Lamar hot sauce or the professor?
I'm going to say he's hot sauce. Hot sizzle, oh baby, my godson.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, all right, one last one because there's a lot of Bills fans in these parts and in Canada.
Yeah.
Where does Josh Allen fit into that mix? Because I know we tend to do this thing with the color of the skin based on how athletic the quarterback is, but Josh Allen's in the same mix as what we're talking about here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Back in the day, Josh Allen would have been moved to the other side of the ball, put some weight on him, and he would have turned into J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I do know about Josh Allen, he's making better decisions with his body. You remember when he first got in the league, dude was trying to run over linebackers, hurdle over safeties, and he was doing it. But I think somebody whispered in there, like, hey, yo, we need you to stick around. And on top of that, you'll make $300 million if you stay healthy. So Josh Allen is a beast, man. He made it in the top 10. And it looks like the respect he's getting from his peers is something that, you know, he had truly worked hard for.
Doesn't matter where we catch up with you, the car, the house, the set, we appreciate you. And we'll be watching you September 7th, CBS This Morning. Nate Burleson, appreciate it, dude.
Appreciate you, T-Money.
Nate Burleson. Should I take T-Money and run with it?
I like it personally.
After the break. T-Money will bring you the best of the week.
I got to call you that, bro. I have to call you that.
Oh, okay. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. Time now for the best of the week. Here's how it works. We comb through the internet for the best of the best. The clips of the week that we bring to you. Show you the options. You head over to Twitter, at our account, at Tim and Friends, to vote on your favorite. Nominee number one. This past weekend's Formula One race in Belgium didn't exactly have all the excitement of a regular race. Heavy rain. They completed two laps, and those two laps were behind a safety. I don't even know why they did the entire thing.
A farce.
It was farcical.
Yes.
That is correct, Jesse. It was a farce and or farcical. But that doesn't mean that there weren't some entertaining moments. Specifically, Lewis Hamilton talking to his pit crew about a deuce gone wrong.
Glad I went to the toilet. The one I went to, someone had dropped a crazy bomb in there. It was the worst thing ever.
The pros and cons of this.
It's gonna haunt me for life.
It's gonna haunt. I just leave my helmet on.
The silence is what gets me through. It's just the transmission of the radio, but it's just perfect. Silence. It's gonna haunt me forever.
You know that there's like in those massive helmets, there are air purification systems.
Didn't know that.
Early pandemic, did you ever see anyone leave their helmet on in grocery stores?
No.
I did a couple times. It's wonderful.
Look at you. Like, you say you're not that resident F1 expert. You know there's air purification inside the F1 helmets.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you are an F1 expert.
You gotta breathe somehow. That's all right. Winning a gold medal has to be one of the more memorable moments of any career in professional hockey. The thrill and the stress of a tournament culminating with being crowned champions, your country cheering you on, at home memorable enough for our women's squad, but Blair Turnbull, well, she took it to a legendary level.
Blair Turnbull looks like she scored on the other side in the celebration. What a celebration for Team Canada. And we hope Blair Turnbull's all right. I think that was in the celebration.
Hockey operations, Scott Salmon.
Here she comes. Look at her.
Director of Hockey Operations, Gina Kingsbury.
She says it's so embarrassing.
Yeah, but she doesn't
it's
care.
Not
it's not embarrassing, Blair.
You will never forget this.
Look at the smile. The pain she's probably in is gone right now with the euphoria of a gold medal.
Jeremy Stein.
Melody, that would her laughing. I don't know if I caught that shot the first time around. That was a broken fibula. Like,
yes.
I broke my fibula in high school hockey, and I did not laugh and chuckle and get embarrassed. Like, I was cussing like a sailor at shore. It was unbelievable.
No, I can't imagine. Worst I've had is a broken pinky, but the amount of times that she said it's so embarrassing was just fantastic. Like, so entertaining, but hopefully she gets well soon. I believe it's a 6 to 8 week injury.
Speedy recovery.
Yeah, 6 to 8 week recovery period, I believe what I saw.
Yeah.
I think so. Hopefully she's okay for the Olympics.
It's a smaller bone on the leg, so hopefully she'll be back. She is a
doctor too, F1 expert and doctor.
Well, I've had a few injuries along the
T-Doc.
Way. I think we're further along than when I did it.
All right.
Yeah. We are less than a week away from the start of the 2021 NFL regular season. For many of you, it means get your fantasy football roster in order. Whether you've already completed your draft or are just getting started with your research, just remember, your team can change in a moment's notice, as demonstrated by another legend. This time, Nick Newman of The Young and the Restless.
Did you get an update?
Yeah, Phyllis, I did. It's not good. It's not good at all. It's the worst case scenario.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I just gotta find some way.
What did you hear?
I can't even bring myself to say it.
Please just tell me. Just tell me, please.
It's a full Achilles tear. They don't even know if he's gonna be ready week one next season.
Oh my God. What are you going to do?
I don't know. I don't have the running back depth to overcome this. What am I gonna do? I don't know.
You can make a trade.
For what? My kicker? My roster is depleted.
What about your waiver wire?
No. It's over.
Nick Newman says Achilles the same way I say Berrios instead of Barrios.
Achilles.
Yeah,
tear. I thought
a full
that
Achilles
too.
Tear.
It's hard when you hear something like that. It's hard to pay attention the rest of the way because you're like, that can't be right. Get it?
Get it?
I don't think that's how you're supposed to pronounce it.
I don't
Nick
know.
Newman's still the GOAT, though. The GOAT of soap operas.
Well, Victor
too.
Victor Newman is. That Nick might be a close. Yeah, do not disrespect.
My bad.
Our final nominee this week comes to us from, of all places, a school board meeting in Virginia, where it was time for the public comment portion of the agenda. That's where someone, by virtue of these virtual meetings, was able to channel their inner Bart Simpson, calling Moe's Tavern, and pulled a prank on the unsuspecting board. Have a listen.
I'm asking that you do not pass this policy in Virginia.
Thank you so much, Ms. Thomas. We do appreciate you. Phil McCracken. Phil McCracken. Eileen Dover. Eileen Dover.
Come on, man.
Wayne Kerr. Wayne Kerr.
Come on. I need a man to hug and kiss.
Yeah.
A man to hug and kiss.
I feel like I'm the type of person that would get got like that.
We cut like several that we weren't allowed to air because they were that far offside. And my guy just kept reading them. Like he was doing Ben Stein's money. Bueller.
There's no way he was in on it, right?
You think it's fake?
No, I don't think so. But again, this is like the second time I've had to address this in the show today. It is possible.
If I was part of that gag, I probably would have chuckled.
Yeah.
Like he just straight read. He's a great actor.
Right,
he's in
looking,
on that.
I'm just looking at those names and you think like you think you're going to get through it. I don't know.
Head over to Twitter, at Tim and Friends, vote, and we'll name him Best of the Week later. After the break, we head to the ballpark. Jays, three games back, the A's starting a three-game series. Do the math. It's a big weekend. We'll discuss all things Jays. Dan Shulman from the Rogers Center, next, right here in Tim and Friends, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360.
Time for real sports talk with Jim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
Thank you very much, Sheep Dogs. Back here, hour number two, Friday edition. Tim and friends, getting you ready for the weekend. Still to come, Rich Gannon joins us at 6:30 Eastern as we preview the AFC West. That'll be on Sportsnet 360 only because we'll be sending you to Blue Jays Central at 6:30 on Sportsnet. That is where we start this hour with the Toronto Blue Jays. It'll be Manea. I already screwed it up. Manea versus Manoah. Manea. Got it good since you understood. They will open the series tonight on Sportsnet. The A's come in having won 4-5 after losing 6 straight. Jays trail open by 3 games in the standings while they are 5 back of Boston heading into the weekend. Here is the lineup that will take the field against Manea. Top five taking shape. Springer DHing again, leading off. Semien, Vladdy, Bichette, and Teoscar. Alejandro Kirk will be behind the plate tonight with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left, Randall Gitschick in center. Kevin Smith playing third base at the hot corner. Big series with time running out for the Jays, but Charlie Montoyo isn't worried, but is he ever really? Come on.
There's plenty of baseball to go, you know, against teams that are ahead of us, so... Yeah, I'm not going to put these 3 games like, oh, this is it, or winning 2 out of 3, or whatever happens. This is not it yet. You know, we've got plenty of games left. So, but of course, from now on, we all know that every game counts.
The glasses again, Jesse. You good with this?
No, not really.
This is starting to annoy you, isn't it?
It's okay. They took 2 of 3 from the Orioles, but like, is it? I don't even know. Is it sunny? He's sitting in the dugout. I mean... Maybe it's the lights from the cameras that are bothering him.
Maybe. Potentially. You can see the shine of the lights.
The shine of the lights. That doesn't look like a sunshine. That looks like a camera light shine.
Not a Sean Paul fan?
Yes.
Just give me the light.
Give me the light.
Yeah. Right. Jays made a roster move today, adding utility man Jake Lamb off waivers from the White Sox, played in 43 games this season, mainly in the outfield, but a utility guy batting .212, 6 home runs, and 13 RBIs. All right, NHL players are heading back to the Olympics in February. Announced today, the NHL and the PA coming to an agreement with the IIHF that will see NHL players play in the Olympics for the first time since 2014. Agreement does allow for the NHL to pull out should COVID conditions dictate. Now, players will need to be fully vaccinated and bubbled while there. The tournament will start February 9th, a few days after NHL weekend. I wonder if some players will pass, Jesse, given the conditions. Senators have signed Drake Batherson's 6-year contract worth close to $30 million. Average annual value just under $5 million. The 23-year-old last year, 17 goals, 17 assists, playing all 56 games for the Sens. Here's Pierre Dorion on the deal.
We feel that Drake is one of our most talented forwards, one of our most talented players. He's a key component for us to be a great team moving forward. We've seen a progression in his play. I think Drake is very happy for my conversation with him earlier today, and we as an organization are very happy, and I think the biggest benefactor here are our fans that get to see him play for another 6 years.
From the Sens to Canadiens at Flushing Meadows. Four Canadians still alive after Bianca and Schapo won last night. Tonight, Leyla Annie Fernandez will have her hands full. The third seed and reigning champ Naomi Osaka, while Felix Auger-Aliassime will also play under the lights, taking on Roberto Bautista Agut. All right, here's the man of the hour, sweet to be sour, Stefano Tsitsipas.
Oh, boy.
And having to let it Tsitsipas several times throughout this tournament, taking on Carlos Alcaraz. First set, Tsitsipas down 5-3, comes to the net for the volley, appears to tweak something in his foot. He dropped the opening set. During the changeover, Tsitsipas calls for the trainer. Have a listen in.
Let's have a listen to...
Ladies and gentlemen, the trainer has been called to court.
Fans not sympathetic, so third set, we're in a tiebreak. Alcaraz closes it out. 2-1 lead, Alcaraz over Tsitsipas. And then here we go. Ben Roethlisberger tweeting after the set. Ash crowd brewing. Tsitsipas leaves for his bathroom break. This time, the officials guided Tsitsipas to the small bathroom right next to the court rather than letting him wander back to the locker room. Tsitsipas was back on the court in less than 4 minutes, down 2-1. However, Tsitsipas comes back, wins the fourth set, 6-6. What is he doing in that bathroom, Jesse, that is allowing him to bounce back like he just did, down 2-1, takes the fourth set after letting it Tsitsipas and winning 6-6.
It didn't look like he changed there, but I know that he sometimes changes clothes. He likes to refresh it, rejuvenates.
Well, he couldn't go to the locker room.
A stall right by the court. It seems like they figured it out. 4 minutes is shorter than 8 minutes. That's
so
a lot shorter.
You're okay with 4 minutes?
Yeah, but I mean, the trainer thing did not help his cause today. Like, he's losing fans. Like, let's be frank. He's losing fans. He's one of the more exciting players on tour.
Good young player.
Was he third in this tournament? And he's losing fans. They are not happy with him.
All right. I don't know if Dan Shulman needed a bathroom break before he came. He's already chuckling. We won't need a bathroom break, hopefully, during this interview, Danny. Unlike Tsitsipas, you go before you need to do your work and stuff like that.
You know, Tim, for years you've been trying to get me to slip up with something. I'm taking the high road, man. I'm not answering.
I was trying to get some sort of segue, and yes, maybe I led you down a road that you didn't need to go.
That's a tough segue.
Yeah. I'll get Lewis Hamilton in, and we'll try and segue with Lewis Hamilton a little later on. That's a deeper joke. All right, so this is an important series. I know Charlie Montoyo can't really say, yeah, we need to win all three, or we need to take two or three, or we're done. That's not what a manager does. But I think the fans look at this and understand, and I am reticent to say must win until it's a must win, but this is pretty damn close to must win.
Yeah, I think realistically they've got to take it at least two out of three in the series for a couple of reasons. One is Oakland is one of the teams they're trying to catch, and the other is if they lose two out of three, what are the chances they're gaining any ground on Boston? Obviously very slim. So it is, you know, until the math says it's a must-win game, it's not a must-win game, but there are 30 left. There are three teams ahead of them. There are five back of the Red Sox. This is a big weekend series, obviously, and I think at a minimum they got to take two out of three against the A's.
And because of that, it's a real interesting start for Alek Manoah, who has surpassed my expectations and most people's expectations of a kid walking into this lineup. It's kind of interesting because you've got this kid who's had great success and you want him out there, but this is a veteran savvy A squad, isn't it?
It really is. A lot of professional hitters, to use that phrase, yeah. A lot of guys who will take their walk, so his command has to be good. But I don't think Alek Manoah is going to go out there with an ounce of I can't do this, or man, this is a big game, I'm not sure I'm up to this. He's not wired that way. We've talked about it ever since we did the first Zoom call with him, whenever it was. None of it felt staged or put on. He is that confident. And he's been great. I was just looking, just before we got on, looking at his 14 starts. He's allowed 2 earned runs or fewer in 11 of his 14 starts. He's been great. I think he's got a 3.15 ERA through basically almost half a season's worth of work, pitching in the American League East in different home ballparks, all of which are hitter-friendly. He's been fantastic, and I don't think there's any reason to expect him to do anything other than be really good again tonight.
It's funny how that confidence can carry you.
It really is. And you can kind of see, you know, you don't want to play amateur psychologist too much, but you can kind of see when some guys are putting it on a little bit and some guys, that's just who they are. This is just who this guy is. And you can see it. All of us can see it when we call the games or watch the games. You know, look at him messing around with Robbie Ray or Hyunjin Ryu or Vladdy or anybody else in the dugout. Like, he was with the Blue Jays a week, and it felt like he'd been on the team for 3 years already. I mean, he's seamlessly become one of the guys. You know, listen, he got tossed out of a game early in his career, right? He's not afraid to speak his mind out there. This is no, you know, shy guy. This is a big guy with a big personality, big confidence, and I think it's serving him and the team very well. He's a guy they really count on right now.
Okay, so obviously the starting pitching has been really good for the last little while. Is the offense starting to warm up a bit? Can you carry something from Baltimore? Do you know how they'll react after that series?
I don't know that you can take that much out of it. I think they scored 14 runs, if I'm not mistaken, in 3 games against Baltimore. And 14 runs is okay. You know, 4.7 a game, it's okay. But Baltimore's the worst pitching team in baseball, 5.87 ERA on the season coming in. So I don't think they're out of it yet. You know, Vladdy looks great, obviously. Springer hopefully is healthy enough that he can do his thing. The guy they really need to get going is a guy who's been so good until the last 12 days or so, and that's Teoscar Hernandez, right? When Teoscar is going, he's as good as anybody, and then, you know, where's your soft landing place in the top 5 of the lineup? Gurriel's been hot. That really helps. But it's really been Vladdy and Gurriel who have been the 2 hottest guys recently for the Blue Jays. So I don't think we've seen enough to say they're out of it, they're ready to erupt or anything like that. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen tonight. It can happen at any moment. And they're facing a guy in Sean Manaea who, although he's had really good stretches in his career, including starting in a wild card game, including a no-hitter 3 years ago, he's got an ERA of 9.90 his last 5 games. And maybe this is a break for the Blue Jays. Frankie Montas, who's terrific, was supposed to start this game, but he's having visa issues. So the A's flip-flop Montas and Manaea. Started Montas yesterday against Detroit, sent him back to Oakland, and pushed Manaea back to start this game. So we'll see if that helps.
14 runs is correct, sir. And the George Springer leading off but still DHing, can we draw some conclusions that he's not quite 100%?
Oh, he's definitely not 100%. If he were 100%, he'd be in center field. So it might be something that he has to play through the rest of the year. Charlie said a couple of days ago that he's been told by the medical staff it's not something that Springer can aggravate. It's not something that can get worse. It's just he might feel it from time to time. You know, he'll probably be a little bit closer to station to station rather than trying to take the extra base if given the opportunity. But if he hits the ball out of the ballpark, he can jog around the bases. And then that's what they need. They need a guy to ignite them at the top of the order like George Springer is capable of doing. I hope in 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, whenever, they can start putting him in the outfield a little bit, because him DHing every day restricts some of the things they like to do in terms of sliding other guys into the DH spot. But right now, if you can have him in the lineup leading off and hopefully swinging the bat well, you're getting a lot of value out of him.
All right, a couple quick pieces of news. Earlier today, we saw Ross Stripling throwing batting practice to Kevin Biggio. Both of those names feel like they could really help down the stretch. Any progression here that you're hearing of?
Yes, so Ross Stripling, they are hoping that they will send him out soon to Buffalo for a rehab outing or 2 or 3, who knows. I would imagine it would be in relief. They don't need a starting pitcher right now, although they do have a doubleheader. I think it's 8 days from now against Baltimore, so I don't know if that's too soon for him to be ready, but it sounds like Stripling is getting close to going to Buffalo. I talked to Biggio today on the field. He did not swing the bat against Stripling. He just was there to track pitches and give Stripling a guy in the batter's box. But then he told me he wanted to go inside and hit off the tee a little bit or hit in the cage a little bit. He'd like to get going soon, and he's hoping to get going soon. So that would be good news as well. Again, it just gives them another option, a left-handed bat, a versatile guy. It's been a tough year for him, right? He's had three. Yeah. He's had the finger injuries and the neck and back injury and now the elbow injury. It's been about, you know, a really tough year for him, for a guy who, as he told me today, literally has never been hurt before this year. Never.
Crazy.
College, minors, majors. So, you know, he's dealing with it like we know he does, but he's hoping to get to Buffalo in a few days as well.
1 minute left in the clock. I'm not going to suggest that Jake Lamb is another reclamation project that came from Arizona at least at one point and then turns into what Robbie Ray has turned into. But the Jays claim from the White Sox today. Is this just depth utility? Is that what we're doing here?
Yeah, third base, can play some first base, left-handed bat. So he'll go to Buffalo. He's on the 40-man roster. He's not on the major league roster, but he's on the 40-man roster. He'll go to Buffalo and get a few games in, I would imagine. And with Biggio out and Espinal out, they're using Valera and Kevin Smith at third base. So I would imagine if he goes down to Buffalo and has a few good days, we could see him on the roster pretty soon, maybe as a platoon third baseman. Again, his timing and Biggio's timing, We'll see how it shakes out, but it's just another option at third base, and he can play a couple of other spots as well.
All right. Next time, absolutely no bathroom break talk. I promise. Uncle Timmy, okay. Pinky swear. Appreciate you. Be well.
Thank you. All right. See you, Tim.
There is Dan Shulman at the yard. Again, Blue Jays Central coming up in mere moments from now. Time for a break, though. When we come back, we'll dive a little deeper into what the Canada hockey roster might look like in Beijing. Everyone's doing it today. It was announced the NHLers will take part. And we'll get you to Blue Jay Central on Sportsnet. Continue on Sportsnet 360. It's Tim and Friends on a Friday. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. Get you to Blue Jay Central on Sportsnet in mere moments from now. The NHLPA and the IIHF have agreed to terms that would send the NHLers to Beijing for the Olympics. And that news earlier today sent all hockey folks at all stations across Canada scrambling to come up with mock rosters for Canada's entry into the Olympics, including the folks at Sportsnet.ca. However, all these hockey guys are at their cottage. So Chris Johnson posted one in February, and we decided to repurpose that one on Sportsnet.ca. And here's a look at what Chris Johnson had in February. And again, I don't want to be mean to Chris because I think some things have changed, yeah, Jesse, along the road. But let's take a look at the roster that he had for Team Canada. The potential forwards were MacKinnon, McDavid, Marner, Marchand, Crosby, Bergeron, Huberdeau, Point, Mark Stone, John Tavares, Sean Couturier, and Steven Stamkos. And he had Shifley as the extra forward and then Matthew Barzal as the extra, who probably wouldn't dress. The seven defensemen that he had on his roster look like this. Shea Theodore, Alex Petrangelo, Thomas Chabot, Mick McCarr, Riley, Dougie Hamilton, Ekblad, and Bowen Byram was the guy, youngster, obviously, that he threw in, I think, for a little talking point. Carey Price, Jordan Binnington as the two goalies, and as Jesse and I are about to talk about, it seems weird that the defense and the goaltending isn't as strong as you normally would point to for Team Canada.
Yeah, I think that that's where most fans are a little bit concerned. I think even with CJ's forwards that he did in February,
yeah,
there's not a ton of debate about, there's a couple names here and there, but it's largely the defensemen and the goalies. I think the big omission from February is Marc-Andre Fleury in net. Obviously Vezina Trophy winner, a guy who's been at a sub 3 goals against average for almost, I think, 4 years in a row now.
Would you put him over Binnington?
So I would put him over Binnington, yes. But it's kind of alarming, the lack of depth in net,
yes,
for Team Canada, because it's still the same names that have been around forever. It's still Carey Price. It's still, for me, Marc-Andre Fleury. I know you have Binnington, and now a lot of people are hyping Darcy Kuemper, too. You're going to get a chance to see what he can do with the Colorado Avalanche. But that was a bit surprising. And then with the defensemen, a lot of people are saying this is a little Leaf-centric and maybe replace Morgan Rielly with a Jacob Chychrun or Jared Spurgeon. But again, like, this is surprising to me that these are the names that, that we're going with. The forwards, what would you do with Matt Barzal, for example?
Right.
Like, he's one of those guys that I think people are looking at. And if you're looking for a theme of speed and skill, why is Matthew Barzal an extra? Why isn't he on the roster instead of someone who, say, like a John Tavares or a Steven Stamkos, if you're going for speed and skill?
Yeah, I think one of the themes, if you're going to use that word here, is obviously the defense. And Troy wrote in and said, our D looks weak compared to past Canadian teams. Yeah. I think one of the parts of the equation in those themes is the older players. So Tavares, Stamkos, Drew Doughty, there are a few names that were left out along the way that you normally would just throw in there, and you wonder if they'll go that way. Also got this from Chris. Actually, it's from Mike. Mike writes in and says, it'll be entertaining when Marner doesn't make it while being the third highest player in the NHL. Bye-bye, Dubas. To which Chris responded with a Montreal Canadiens avatar, I might add, 0% chance he's not on the team. There are some interesting arguments about the skilled players, because as we all know, like, there's got to be some spackle, some grout. And I think that that team that CJ put out there in February didn't have enough grit. For me, Darnell Nurse is a name that is definitely in the mix on D. And if not, I don't mind putting Colton Parayko in there just to hammer a couple of guys in and around the boards or in front of the net. Nurse can do that. He can take care of that. And if you put Drew Doughty on the team, he's got a little bit of that sandpaper in him. But to me, I don't know if Morgan Rielly makes my team.
Yeah, some people throwing out Jake Muzzin's name as well, just for the same reasons that I think you're talking about the Colton Parayko's as well. The age is one thing that really sticks out for me when I look at this roster. The line that was so great in 2016 in the World Cup, the Crosby, Bergeron, Marchand line. I mean, these guys are getting up there in age. And then you bring in the Tavareses, you bring in the Stamkoses. Like, suddenly that roster and their average age is starting to get up there a little bit. And when you look at the other teams, like, the American team is much younger than the Canadian team will be. And I don't know if that's necessarily, in such a short tournament, I'm not sure how much it matters, because it's not, you know, you're not playing for a month, you're playing for just a short little couple weeks. But definitely that's something that caught my eye originally, because this roster is getting older, without question. And you're going to be dealing with playing against teams like the U.S. that are young and super, super skilled.
Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, there's some names out there. Eric's writing in and said, how about Taves? That's another one of the older guard. John writes in and says, how about Rob Zamner? Solid. Like the reference. You know the show. Thank you very much for jumping in. For me, it's Darnell Nurse, Marc-Andre Fleury, Darcy Kuemper.
Yes.
Those are the names that jump out at me. Ryan O'Reilly, Bo Horvat. But I think that Scheifele and Stone give you those skill guys that can still bring some physicality, some grit, because Ryan O'Reilly is a name that you would throw in there.
Yeah.
And I will say this, there's a lot of Habs fans writing in, and I would give this some time based on how the start of the season goes, but Suzuki's a pretty talented player that does a lot of things really well, can play center, can play the wing, and sometimes you just need that skill guy that can move anywhere.
This is always the decision that the management is going to have to make. One thing is, how youthful do you want to go? And the next thing is how much grit do you really think you need in a tournament that's 2 weeks like this? I mean, everybody is going to have this, you know, they're all NHL guys for the most part. So you get into a pickle. Do you decide to take the best player that you can possibly take, or do you go with the grit? And I look at the U.S. roster, and I know you wanted to bring this up quickly, just because when we look at the betting odds, the U.S. is the second favorite. Canada is still favored at -125. The U.S. is +350. But just listen to the D core for the U.S., okay? And Zach Werenski, Seth Jones, Quinn Hughes, John Carlson, Adam Fox, Norris Winner, Charlie McAvoy, Torrey Crew, Jacob Slavin.
Yeah.
And to me, like, those are pretty much eight of the strongest young up-and-coming defensemen in the NHL.
With a little bit of everything mixed in,
yes,
too, right? Like, it's not just a puck-moving defenseman.
Yeah.
It's not just a little bit of both toughness and skill.
Right.
They got a great combination of all that. Then you add Matthews and some of their skill guys, Kane, like they got.
Totally.
This could be a team to be like, plus 350 might be some value on the
United States. we can bring up the betting odds. Right now, Canada minus 125. This is on Sports Interaction. USA plus 350. Sweden and Russia, the next two, basically plus 500, and Russia 550. Finland plus 800. So I think what sticks out here, Tibby, is that in previous years, you'd think that Canada would be an overwhelming favorite.
Well, I honestly, like, and I don't make the odds for Sports Interaction, but I believe that those odds are based on that.
Yes.
Like, those odds, if you project the teams, I would think that you would have the United States closer to Canada.
Yes, I agree. And McDavid said also when he was talking about this team, hopefully I make it.
Yeah.
I think he's going to make it. Yeah. And they're going to need him to perform because there's some other good teams in the Olympics.
Don't forget
too.
The Americans have goaltending too.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hellebuck.
All right, time to send
they're
you good. To Blue
they're
Central.
Scary. I'm nervous.
Blue Jay Central coming up on Sportsnet. Jamie Ben Arden. That's right, at the letters with Jamie Campbell standing by as the Jays open up a series with the A's. As for us, we will continue with our AFC West preview as Rich Gannon joins us back in 60 seconds on Sportsnet 360. If you're watching the Jays, please enjoy responsibly. This is Tim and Friends continuing on Sportsnet 360. Thanks for making the flick with us. And if you're already here, hey, good to have you along. We continue previewing our NFL season. Listen, we're going division by division, day by day. Our last AFC division today, the West. Lately, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have dominated this division to the tune of a 26-4 record over the last 5 years. But the Chargers have a young, exciting QB. The Broncos might only be a QB away from challenging for the best in the West. There's no doubt the Chiefs rightfully have their eyes on something bigger than just a division title, but if they slip up, might be a couple teams ready to strike. Here's Anthony Caminiti.
The Buccaneers have beaten the defending champion Chiefs 31-9.
This was a dominating performance across the board.
Yeah, there's no other way to say it. The Chiefs got smoked last February. Not even the great Patrick Mahomes can shake a bad offensive line, as we learned. While the Chiefs address that need, and in a big way, does Mahomes have enough around him to avenge their Super Bowl loss? Meanwhile, the Chargers have been all about the good vibes here in training camp.
I like your vibe. Your vibe fires me up. I woke up today really excited to watch you run around.
New head coach Brandon Staley brings enthusiasm, while new offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi brings an imaginative offense. That should go nicely with a super talented defense that welcomes back former All-Pro Derwin James. Can the Chargers give the Chiefs a run for their money in this division, or is Mahomes just simply too good?
I am inevitable.
The Broncos have a new quarterback. No, it's not Aaron Rodgers. Geez, remember that? It's Teddy Bridgewater, who beat out Drew Lock for the job. The team around him is quite good, but they might live to regret passing on Justin Fields and Mac Jones in the draft. Time will tell with that one. And there's only one thing to do when discussing the Raiders. Why, it's checking in on isgrudengoneyet.com, of course. Yikes. Yeah, we're entering year 4 of the new Gruden era and have yet to see a winning season. They're hoping a retooled offensive line and further development on defense will finally lead to some success. Pressure's on here, Chucky.
Hey, listen, in the morning now, let's get your motors running. Are we clear on that?
It's a simple question for these teams. Can anyone stop the Chiefs from a 6th straight division crown?
Probably not, but joining the fray to discuss exactly how the West will be won is a man who not only won it, was also an MVP. That's right, kids. Former NFL MVP, Tim and Friends' favorite, Rich Gannon, joining us from Indianapolis. Rich, been too long. How are you, man?
Tim, I'm doing great, brother. I am so fired up for the start of the 2021 season.
You and me both. I was giddy like a father watching his child graduate from high school earlier in the show. Let's start here in the West with the favorites. And as you heard Anthony Caminiti say, everyone's challenging the Chiefs for the division title. I feel like they are head and shoulders above the rest. Do you think I'm wrong?
No, I think you're right. I think it starts with the quarterback and head coach combination. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, I think, is the best player in the league, certainly at that position. You look at his production, his consistency. And, of course, Andy Reid doesn't get enough credit, Tim. Not just the fact that he's the head coach, but he's the primary play caller. He does a great job, I think, putting together a package of plays that not only Mahomes can operate and function in, but he does a great job not – discouraging his ability to freelance and to create offense. And I think that's one of the strengths of him. You look at the talent they have around him. You look at Tyreek Hill, of course, Travis Kelce. They can run the football. And the best thing that they did this offseason was to address the issues that came up and really bit him in the rear end in the Super Bowl. Yeah. The offensive line wasn't good enough. They went out and got Orlando Brown. They made a couple of good draft picks. They have rebuilt the offensive line in front of Patrick Mahomes.
So I was on this tear last year about Travis Kelce maybe already being the greatest tight end that I've ever seen. And earlier on the show, Nate Burleson and I were talking about the greatest receiver in the game, and I asked him flat out. He said it was Stephon Diggs. I lean towards Devontae Adams. He likes Devontae Adams. And then I just flat out said, could Travis Kelce be the best receiver in the game? And he said, yes. Like, it's what he does on the field in that offense is not just tight end-like. It is game changer-like.
It is. He's really unstoppable. I think it's their ability to move him around in the formations with different personnel groupings. You know, he's not always lined up as an inline tight end. They put him in the slot. They put him outside the numbers. They do a great job creating mismatches. You can't put a safety on him. You can't put a linebacker on him. You put your best cover corner on him, and he still finds a way to create separation. I just think he's a unique player. He runs routes as if he were a wide receiver. He's got the length that you love at that position. He's got good change of direction skills, and he's so productive down in the red zone. You look at, and I think it's the relationship between Mahomes and Kelce on third down the red zone. When they need a critical play, that's usually the first place that Patrick Mahomes looks.
Yeah, without a doubt. Let's move on from the Chiefs for a second. And Brandon Staley, Jesse and I were doing our sports interaction picks a couple days ago, and I was looking at Kevin Stefanski for Coach of the Year because I think the Browns might be taking the jump this year. But Staley was the odds-on favorite to win Coach of the Year, and I found that really interesting. Either they're betting on him or they're betting on this team to be pretty good. Do you see the same thing here?
I think so. I mean, look, I think a lot of these owners, it's a copycat league. So you look at, you know, what happened with Kevin Stefanski. You look at Sean McVay a couple years ago. They want to go out and find this young, up-and-coming coordinator that's got the ability to take over and be a great leader on a football team. I think Staley can be that type of player or coach. And I think you look at their football team, and it starts with the quarterback. I mean, I did a lot of Charger games last year, and Justin Herbert is just so incredibly consistent. I mean, for a rookie last year to play at the level he did, Offensive Rookie of the Year, he's such a, you know, he's a smart player, Tim. He was an three-time academic All-American at Oregon. His brother is a medical student at Columbia University. I mean, this is a smart family, and he picked up that system so fast. I think what was most impressive to me, a lot of the rookies we see, you know, a lot of turnovers. We see the poor decision-making in critical situations. He took great care of the football. He was very productive down in the red zone in situational football, whether it was two-minute, third down football. He's just a really smart, intelligent player that knows what to do with the football. And for a guy his size, at 6'5" at 230 pounds, he's got very good mobility and escapability from the pocket.
Without a doubt. All right, so the Broncos go with Teddy Bridgewater. What do you think their ceiling is?
I think this team's in trouble. I really like Vic Fangio. I think he's a good football coach. He's really involved in the defense, as you know. But the problem is, and I had great conversations with him last year, they don't have the production and consistency that you need at that position. you know, they went with Locke last year, and he was an accident waiting to happen. He played his best football when the games were over late in the fourth quarter during garbage time. They bring in Teddy Bridgewater. You know, Bridgewater's not the same player he was before the injury in Minnesota. He was a subpar player, in my opinion, last year in Carolina. He doesn't give you a lot of, unscripted offense. And to me, I don't know there's a huge difference right now between Drew Locke, who has a little bit more mobility and lacks the experience, or a guy like Teddy Bridgewater. I think they're the worst team in that division.
Hmm. Okay, so then let's talk about the Raiders, because a lot of people feel like it's the Raiders. There's some pressure on a coach that you know pretty well in John Gruden to get things done this year. And to me, every time I watch them, I feel like they're better than their record suggests. And yet, as Bill Parcells once told us, you are what your record says you are.
You're right. You know, John's been there 3 years. They've yet to have a winning season. They've yet to make the playoffs. And this is an important year, I think, for everyone in that organization. They made a lot of changes, Tim, on the defensive side of the ball. Their defense was unwatchable a season ago. And, you know, you look at their fourth quarter. They gave up 176 fourth quarter points, the most in football. Why? Because their inability to rush the passer, and they had just 15 takeaways last year, which was the third fewest in the league. They don't do a good enough job getting pressure on the quarterback and playing good tight coverage. So they went out and hired Gus Bradley, the Chargers defensive coordinator. They really have invested in their defensive line and in their secondary. I think this is a unit that can be a whole lot better in 2021. And remember now, they beat the Chiefs last year. They went on the road and beat Cleveland. They beat the New Orleans Saints on a Monday night early in the season. This team has plenty of firepower on offense. We talked about Travis Kelce. Darren Waller may be the second best tight end in all of football. I mean, this guy is incredible. Carr has been consistent. He's very accurate with the football. He makes good decisions. They've got some young receivers that need to step up. And, of course, they have Josh Jacobs, who I think is one of the best young backs in football. But it's all about the defense with the Raiders. If they can improve a little bit defensively, there's no reason why this team can't have a winning record and get back to the postseason.
That might be one of those kids that if you're looking for a future bet down the road, Raiders on the over and wins, at least according to Rich Gannon. All right, Rich, a lot of people are filling out or at least drafting their fantasy football teams right now, and they're always looking for that diamond in the rough. I'm always looking for that diamond in the rough. Give me, I don't care if it's a quarterback, I don't care if it's a receiver, a running back, or a tight end. Give me one guy that you feel like is on the verge of making a statement in this league and that could kind of change the balance for anyone out there drafting a fantasy football team.
You know, I know he was hurt last year, but Joe Burrow really got my attention, guys. I did a couple of their games early this season. I watched all of his snaps from college. I think the team is going to be better around him on both sides of the football. And this guy has a ton of upside. He throws the deep ball really well. He's got better mobility than you give him credit for. He's very accurate. He's got some toughness to him. He's got a good young coach in Zach Taylor, who's very involved, obviously, in the play calling. And I just think if they can get better around him, I think he can have a sensational season in a division. You look at Cleveland, I think Pittsburgh's going to take a step back. You know, the Ravens have some big injuries. I'm not suggesting that Cincinnati is going to be a playoff team this year, but I think Joe Burrow is going to put up some huge numbers.
The only question I have, and I completely agree with you on your assessment of Burrow, only question, did they do enough for that offensive line to protect him enough to be able to do that damage?
You know, it's a work in progress, and I think they've got to be smart with some of those players early. They've got to be able to run the football. They've got a really talented back. There's got to be a commitment to that. And they've got to – look, their defense – we talked about the Raiders' defense. Cincinnati was worse than the Raiders. I mean, they don't get off the field on third down. They haven't been able to stop the run. They don't create any negative plays. If he can get a little bit of help from the defense, we talk about the importance of complementary football. But, you know, I just think Joe Burrow has got a chance to be special. You look at those interceptions he threw just 5 and 10 games last year. He's a smart player. He's a good decision maker. He's got some toughness. He's got some juice. He's got some swagger to him. I like Joe Burrow to put up some big numbers this year for the Bengals.
I like talking football with Rich Gannon, and I could do it for hours. I love going through the X's and O's with you. Always appreciate you doing this with us, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up throughout the season.
Tim, you're the best. See you, brother.
Be well. There is Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP and a great football mind. Time for one last break. We'll get to the best of the week winner. We'll do a little last call with my guy Jesse Rubinoff, and we'll do all of that next right here on Tim and Friends on Sportsnet 360. The show is called Tim and Friends, and you are our friends. So you've been voting for the best of the week winner at Tim and Friends on Twitter. Let's take a look at the results. Not surprising, our Twitter poll says that it is the council meeting that got pranked by those who have a certain affinity, probably for Bart Simpson calling Moe's Tavern. Enjoy.
That you do not pass this policy in Virginia.
Thank you so much, Ms. Thomas. We do appreciate you. Phil McCracken. Phil McCracken. Eileen Dover. Eileen Dover. Wayne Kerr.
That's a good one. I
Wayne Kerr.
That'd be neither. That's new on me.
Someone said that the referee at yesterday's Canada-Honduras game was Wayne Kerr.
Oh, nice. Very, very soccer name, Wayne Kerr.
Yes, Wayne Kerr. So that is our Best of the Week winner. We appreciate that you vote at Tim and Friends each and every week.
Blair Turnbull was like, that's tough competition. Like, what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, it always seems like whenever we get to the ones that are just a little on the edge, those are the ones that
win. Yes. Yeah, that was an easy one to foresee, I think. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do last call, and let's begin with the one-year anniversary of one of the greatest moments in Toronto Raptors history, OG Anunoby's buzzer beater against the Celtics in Game 3 of their Eastern Conference semifinal series in the bubble. Hard to believe. That was two seasons ago already. What's your favorite part of this play, Tim?
The pass. The pass to me from Kyle Lowry will forever be one of the most ridiculous things that I have ever seen in my life. I love our title, by the way. What about scarves? to go over, like, so Lowry's what, 6 foot tops, right?
Yes.
And even if he's 6 foot, we might be exaggerating a wee bit.
Wish he was. Wish
to go over Taco Fall, who is 7'5", deliver a cross court pass right into the shooter's pocket for OG Anunoby, who had 0.5 seconds on the clock to deliver this three-pointer. I don't know that I've ever seen a greater, more clutch pass than what Lowry did on that inbounds play.
Everything about it is perfect, and that's why there's a million angles of it, and it's so much fun to keep watching. It's just, like, it's beautiful. It's poetry in motion. But interestingly enough, like, that play might not have happened if it wasn't in the bubble, because Lowry had a little extra room to operate there that maybe there would have been some fans sitting there.
No, agreed.
But nonetheless, we still have that moment for Raptors lore.
Forget scarves, forget OG, forget Serge Ibaka. That is art.
Yes, completely agree. Speaking of art, in case you haven't heard, which would be literally impossible, Drake's new album, Certified Lover Boy, dropped this morning at 2 a.m. Eastern time, and Kawhi Leonard makes a hilarious, ridiculous, whatever you want to call it, cameo in the video for the track Way Too Sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Does this make you think that one day Kawhi come back?
No, this just makes me think that Drake is a normal human being who respects athletes as friends once he gets to meet them. Like, there is some people, and listen, my ex co-host was one of those guys who just would never forgive Kawhi Leonard for not running it back with the Raptors, and I kind of sort of understand, but I went to our Instagram and I asked if anyone was upset that Drake put him in the video, and nobody was upset. Everyone was just like, it's just, I mean, he met the guy, he likes the guy, obviously, he put him in a video, and it's kind of funny to me.
It is funny. And it's surprising, too, that someone of Kawhi's personality, who likes to be so low-key, would be in a music video that's going to be seen, I don't know, like a trillion times.
But it's got that Backstreet Boy, like, tongue-in-cheek. Like, everything's tongue-in-cheek in the entire video.
Oh, yeah.
And having Kawhi Leonard there standing with his hands. Where do I put these?
Okay, between that and Donda, have you ever seen have you ever seen more publicity for albums than this? Ever?
No, this generation absolutely positively understands how to advertise themselves. Yeah. And Kanye West might be pre that generation, but Drake is like the tip of the spear on this, and it's unbelievable the amount of publicity he got for dropping an album.
Every big Twitter account, and frankly, every small Twitter account tweeting about it last night, 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay, college football is back, And we got to check out the crowd at today's North Carolina-Virginia Tech game.
Oh, my God.
That is a full house, and that's 66,000 fans going nuts as the Hokies took the field to enter Sandman. Now, these kind of scenes have been few and far between in the last 2 years. Is this encouraging? Like, we like seeing these fans, or is this terrifying?
Natural reaction at this point is terrifying.
Yeah.
However, I do know that there are a lot of universities that are mandating vaccinations. I don't know what it is in Blacksburg, Virginia. That's Virginia Tech, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In Blacksburg, Virginia, I don't know if they've mandated vaccinations or a negative, but it looks like the pandemic is over there. That's all I can say. And if they're double vaxxed and like there's a high, all of them are double vaxxed, then
I'm with eventually, you. Yeah. I'm with you. It's like the angel and the devil on the shoulder. Yeah. It's like you want to appreciate it, but also like we're still in the middle of the pandemic.
I don't know if I'm very paranoid about this pandemic. Like yeah. I think at the start I was a little bit. Since then I've eased. I went to Canada, Honduras yesterday, and there are like several awkward moments where I'm like, do I take this mask off? I'm outside. Like, all of these things running through your head. It was like I was back in public for real for the first time.
Yeah.
It was kind of awkward. So kind of just seeing that makes you feel good until you realize maybe it's not the best.
No doubt. Okay, one more I just want to get to quickly. There's four Canadians through to the third round of the U.S. Open. Tonight, Leila Fernandez will take on defending champ Naomi Osaka on Arthur Ashe Stadium. Four remaining. You know who they are. How many will remain when we're back here on Monday?
Oh, on Monday. I think it opens up. I think we got three. I think obviously Leila Annie Fernandez, that's a tough draw. But I think the other three can get through. Trying to do the...
Felix faces Roberto Bautista Agu, Denis Shapovalov against Lloyd Harris, and Bianca against Greet Minnan.
The South Africans rank Lloyd Harris is like, I think, 58th in the world.
Yeah.
I think that there's an opportunity here for three Canadians to still be in the draw when we come back on Monday.
They have some serious momentum going.
Opens up a little bit. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
That's it for us. As we leave you, let's take a look back at the week that was on the show, as we always do. On a Friday. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you on Labor Day Monday. That's right. We're working Labor Day. Have a great weekend. Talk to you again on Monday.
It's Friday then. It's Saturday, Sunday. What? It's Friday then. It's Saturday, Sunday. What? It's Friday again. It's Saturday, Sunday.
I can think of stranger things, like this woman arguing with her French bulldog.
Dr. Dan has won the coveted Reed Family Championship, and we've seen a video of Dr. Dan in the bunker before, and let's just say it didn't go well. But this time out, and this is, I guess, the reason why Kenny posted this.
I love how he credited
Dr. Dan, good form, takes it back,
gets
a great amount of sand, and gets it out.
Couldn't be a more eloquent and decent man, unlike his son, Kenny.
I was just reading the praise for some of my work on the back cover of my book.
I think we confiscate this trophy.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness.
I don't know what we do to this trophy. If you just lost to your dad.
Be careful with that.
If you just lost to your dad, Ken Reed, this trophy.
It's impossible. That's my jersey.
He used to fight with my co-host all the time. But to me, it ended up feeling like Logan Paul fighting Jake Paul. I'm not sure who I wanted to see get knocked the bleep out more.
Which Paul am I? I want to be Rich Paul these days, not even Jake or Logan.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyways,
I got BDM, so
you do not have a BlackBerry.
You and Masai, that's it, man.
What are you talking about? Are you serious? What do you think this is?
What? Does that work?
Do you have Brick Breaker? Can you still play Brick Breaker?
No, we got Snake on this one.
No, man. Come on.
I don't know what I like better, the BlackBerry or the drapes, my dude. Those are quality drapes. We're going to take a break.
I'm coming in studio.
What the hell am I hearing in my ear? What is that?
Timmy, it's Ken Reed calling from Cabot down in Inverness, Nova Scotia. How you doing, buddy?
What are you doing on my phone?
I went into Dr. Dan's basement on this trip home and found more Ken Reed golf hardware. So it's coming back to the studio, baby.
I can't wait. And by I can't wait, I mean I can.
I'm too sexy for this chain. Too sexy for your game. Too sexy for this fame. Yeah, yeah. I'm too sexy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.